This week, June 30th, 2015, on The Digital Story. 5 tips to energize your portraits. New camera tech for the next iPhone. Surefire way to make your clients happy. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I have a terrific show for you. I'm recording this on camera day, Monday. You know, I usually record the day before we publish, which is on Tuesday. And I know what National Photography Month is. I actually did some promotion around that and all that. I have to tell you, I don't really know what camera day is. So I haven't done anything about it. I mean, I saw a few posts that, hey, it's camera day. And, you know, I people mentioned it to me and I said, yeah, I could use a new camera. What does that mean? So anyway, I just want you to know that I know that camera day happened. And then I'm also going to confess, I have no idea what it's really about. And if you want to enlighten me, please post a comment on the show notes that we do on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thedigitalstory. And maybe next year I'll get into it and we'll do it right. So this year just kind of blew right by me, camera day, whatever that is. Anyway, let's get on to the show. We've got some good stuff for the show, and I do know what this is about. So we have a weekly update. I got a couple good stories for you right there. Then we're going to get into some portrait tips. We're going to get into a technique to keep clients happy. I've got a screening room and some virtual camera club news. So lots of good stuff to cover, and I better stop goofing around here lamenting about camera day and get to it. The weekly update. Apple's dual camera technology rumored to be nearing completion. And this is from DP Connect. Apple has been working on the dual lens technology for 3 years. But until recently, has been hindered by a number of issues, including image blur and supplier inadequacies. LinX's processing technologies may have solved those blurring problems, and Apple is said to have found a supplier for the components that is able to meet its production demands. Again, this is from DP Connect, and they're basing it on another report that I believe was out of Asia. So a couple things here. Before too long, we'll have new iPhones announced. Usually in the fall, they're delivered. And we're in the so-called S cycle, which means that the model number came out last year, the iPhone 6 in this case. So usually we get an update to that model, and it usually has an S, which I think originally stood for speed way back when, I think the 3GS or something like that. And then they just stuck with it. They go, well, everyone knows what it is. We'll stay with it. So we'll probably see the iPhone 6S in the fall, and there might even be a couple varieties of that. Now, the nice thing about the S cycle has been that we usually get really nice camera improvements for the S cycle. And I know I experienced that with the 3GS, with the 4S, with the 5S. And I'm hoping we see that with the 6S. That's because I'm on the S cycle. I don't even have a 6 yet. I'm still working with my old, poor old 5S that just is barely hanging in there. Not. It's fantastic. I love that phone. But I want to see more improvements in the camera. And that's just because, as we all know, whether we're carrying an Android device or an iPhone or a Windows phone, whatever, that camera is the one that we have with us all the time. And therefore, when great moments in life happen or sad moments in life happen or a fantastic sunset happens before our eyes, we have a camera with us that we can capture those moments with. And so we want that camera to be as good as possible. That doesn't mean we're not going to use our DSLRs or our mirrorless cameras. That just means for those moments when stuff happens and we don't have those other cameras with us, we want a good camera in our mobile device. We don't know if this dual lens technology is going to make it into the 6S or not. There's no way of telling. I mean, this is a rumored report. We're pretty sure that Apple's been working on this. And we're pretty sure that if they can, they would probably like to put it in the 6S. But we're just going to have to wait and see. Regardless if it's dual lens technology or something else, I suppose that the 6S will continue to move the ball forward with its camera, as will the other smartphone competitors, and that we'll continue to enjoy having really good technology in our pocket, not only for connecting to the internet, making phone calls, texting, and all that other good stuff, but for taking pictures. And I love that. So I'm crossing my fingers for dual lens in the fall. We'll see what happens. And of course, if there is, we'll be talking about it on this show. In other news, firmware 4.0 for the Fujifilm X-T1 improves the autofocus. And this is from the Flow Blogger. And they write, "The Fujifilm X-T1 doesn't have terrible focusing performance to begin with. But now they're stating that it's much better than it was before. The new firmware 4.0 includes new wide and tracking methods, as well as performance boosts to single AF point focusing. For portrait photographers, the camera will now have an eye detection focusing option too." All right, well, this is what I love about digital cameras. The fact that manufacturers are willing to continue to improve the hardware even after it's been on the market for some period of time, and I believe the X-T1's been out now for well over a year, and firmware 4.0, they've had these prior updates, they've all done nice little things to make the camera even better, and this one sounds like a biggie to me. As they said in the post here, it's not like the AF performance was bad to begin with. It was pretty good. I believe they've had firmware update to address some of its prior shortcomings. And now they really want to take it to the next level. And if you own an X-T1, you don't have to go out and buy the latest Fujifilm camera to get good autofocusing or better autofocusing. You just have to apply this firmware update. I love that. I love that. And regardless if you're shooting with an X-T1 or a camera from another brand, keep your eyes peeled for those firmware updates because they're a big deal. I mean, they're really cool things. And I think a lot of people just overlook them. They may see a tweet about it or something and go, oh yeah, I need to do that. And then, you know, they forget. We all forget, right? When we're thinking about five things at once. But try to make a mental note to keep your camera up to date. And that is this week's Weekly Update. Story number one, 5 tips to energize your portraits. I take a lot of portraits of people who aren't professional models. They're everyday folks. They're doing testimonials. They're representing their business. They're being featured in a news article, all sorts of stuff. And typically when I point the camera at them, they're not comfortable. Nor do I expect them to be, right? I mean, that's, when you think about it, you know, we're behind the lens so much that we sometimes forget how it feels to be in front of the lens. And that suddenly you just feel like that you're under a microscope and every little thing is being scrutinized. So in order to help people relax and draw out the person that, you know, attracted whomever to ask me to photograph them in the first place, I have these tips. I have these little things that I do. So I thought I'd share them with you right now because they're very handy. Now, number one, and at the very top of the list, I tell people this almost every shoot, and sometimes I even remind models about this. And that tip is make sure that your weight is on one foot or the other. That's right. Make sure that your weight is on one foot or the other. People tend to stand flat-footed when they're having their picture taken. When they do that, there's no energy to their body. Everything's just kind of blah, just kind of anchored to the concrete. So I say, okay, I just want you to put all your weight on one foot or the other, and let's see what happens. The minute they do that, everything looks a lot more interesting. Now, this applies even if you're not shooting the whole body. If you're only shooting them from the waist up, this still works because everything is connected. So I say, okay, shift your weight. Go to the other foot. Put your weight on that foot. Do this. Lean on that, right? There's a chair there. Put your weight on that chair with your arm and kind of lift that one foot and let the other foot hold everything up. Just have them constantly move their feet around and get that weight on one foot or the other, but never on both feet at the same time. If they do just that one thing, it will improve the portrait. Number two, burst mode. One of the reasons why I like to shoot with reflectors instead of flash for portraiture is because with reflectors, I have a continuous light source and I can use burst mode. And burst mode is very helpful in portraits. Now, you'll go through a lot of frames because, you know, the thing about burst mode, I usually shoot at low speed burst mode, not high speed. There's no need for high speed. Low speed will usually do it, right around 4, 5, 6 frames a second, somewhere in there. And then I have the person move. I say, okay, you know, put your hands up and adjust your hair. Put your hands on your shirt and tug it down. Put your hands on your hips. Now put your hands on your other hips. Now turn your back to the camera and come around to the camera. All these sort of activities that I have them doing. And then I'm shooting 5, 6, 8 frames at a time while they're doing it. This really shakes things up because, again, as I said at the top of this story, people, when you first point the camera at them, tend to plant themselves in some sort of stationary position and then put some sort of frozen expression on. These are things you just do not want in your portraits. You want to get some life. So use burst mode and get them moving and then shoot them moving. Now, like I said, you'll throw away a lot of frames. It doesn't make any difference. If you come away with a dozen that you're absolutely crazy about, those other frames make no difference. Burst mode's really nice. The only real catch to it is that you need a continuous light source because very few flashes, unless you have the super professional studio lighting set up with giant power packs, can't keep up with 4 or 5 frames a second. Number three, I call this twist and shout. Now, it's really just twisting. Although I've seen some portraits where they had people shout and they photographed them while they were shouting. That's not usually what I'm after when I do my portrait shoots. And not to mention that if I'm shooting them in a business or something, the shouting might, not work out so well. But the twisting part I really like. And this kind of ties into the burst mode thing and the one foot or the other thing. They all kind of hook together here. But a lot of times I'll have people start in a position where they're not facing the camera or they're not squared up to the camera and then move to the camera and then, you know, turn around, twist around to the camera. So they can start with their back pretty much to the camera and their head kind of facing me a little bit, you know, so I can get a little bit of their face and stuff, take a few shots and then have them turn and move to the camera. Again, just turning around, starting with your back to the camera and turning around creates some really interesting poses and some really nice energy. And it works really well. And again, if you're doing it with burst mode and you're having them keep their weight, you know, on one foot or the other, kind of while they're doing this, while they're spinning around, you can get some really nice stuff, some really nice energetic shots. Number four, give them confidence. And, you know, I've talked about the importance of how you interact with people you're taking pictures of in other podcasts. And, you know, the thing that I usually say is, you know, don't go silent on them, right? Don't be, you know, taking some shots and then, you know, scowling at your LCD, then kind of looking at them with your eyes and looking back at your LCD and scowling some more. Imagine being on the other end of that and just going, oh my God, these are horrible. This is horrible. This is like, you know, these are going to be the worst pictures ever. I'm ugly. Oh my God, you know, as Kramer would say on Seinfeld, I'm hideous, turn away, you know, that whole thing. No, do not do any of that. What you want to do is just the opposite. You want to talk to them before, during, and after the shoot. You want to be chatting with them. You want to compliment them on the things that are truly flattering. If they have a really nice shirt on, compliment the shirt. If their hair looks great that day, compliment the hair. If it's a woman and she's wearing makeup that just, you know, knocked it out of the park, say something about that. If they have a pretty smile, if their eyes are sparkly, all that kind of stuff. Anything that's real that you can look them right in the eye and truthfully compliment them on, do that. Do that. That really helps. But then the real clincher is, as you're working through the shoot and having them do these things that we talked about earlier, when you get a really good shot of them, stop the shoot for a second, go over, turn the camera so they can see the LCD and show them that good shot. When you show them that good shot that looks really nice, that will change everything right there. Suddenly they're relieved. Suddenly they have more confidence. Suddenly this is fun. Suddenly this is something that they want to do. When they see that good shot, it will excite them. And that's so important. Now, I try to do this as early in the shoot as possible. Usually, you know, 5 or 10 minutes into it. A lot of times, you know, we all have to get warmed up. So let's say the first 20 frames probably aren't that exciting. Plus, you're probably still trying to figure out how to photograph them, right? But once you sort of find the angle that you want to work, and once they get loosened up a bit, mainly because you're making them do all this stuff, and you get that shot, show it to them, and then the rest of the shoot will just breathe. So give them confidence, tell them honest compliments, and then show them good shots, and that shoot will continue to build momentum. And finally, the fifth tip that I have is change the scene. A lot of times, you know, we just get planted in one place. We're going to shoot in this corner of the office. We're going to shoot in this open hallway. We're going to shoot under this tree. We're going to shoot in front of the business sign. You know, wherever everyone decides the shot should happen, that's where you shoot. That's fine. Do that shot. But don't end the shoot without doing another shot. Change it up, because I have noticed so many times that if we just change locations, we just go to a different place, it's like a fresh start for everyone. But now we're warmed up. Now that we have a little confidence, now we have a little energy, and we get to that new spot, and then boom, suddenly really nice pictures happen. And that happens to me over and over and over again. So those are my 5 tips to energize your portraits. Trust me, they work. And they especially work with people who don't like having their picture taken. Build rapport so they'll buy into these 5 tips as you ask them to do it. And I promise you, you'll come away with pretty darn good shots. Story number 2, the visual shot list. So I wrote about this on The Digital Story. And it's one of the things that I do to make sure that I have happy clients. Now, what this addresses is this. When people tell you about the kind of shots that they want, they will have a picture in their head when they tell you this stuff. And let's say, for example, they say, well, we want the man holding his award. Okay, so you go, all right, great. So we'll take a shot of the man holding his award for this shot. Well, think about how many different ways there are for a person to hold a plaque or a trophy or something, an award, certificate, and how many different ways you can frame that, you know, and what kind of lighting is there going to be? And what kind of depth of field is there going to be behind the subject? Do they want to see the setting, or do they want the setting blurred out? And, you know, there's all these considerations. So even though it's something as simple as, I just want the man holding his award, you really don't have any more information at that point than you did when you first signed up for the job. And this is where the visual shot list comes in handy. Because if the client then can say, and it would look something like this, and they can point to a picture that represents or comes close to the image that they have in their head, then you can see that image. And of course, as a photographer, right away, you know how to create your version of that shot. So for example, if the background is really bright and somewhat out of focus, and the subject's off to one side or the other, and it's a little more edgy, a little bit more contrasty, maybe the colors are muted a bit, all those sort of things that you can easily do once you know what you're supposed to do, then that way, the picture that you show the client after the shoot will come much closer to matching what they had in their head when they hired you. And this works for pro bono shots. This works even for shots where friends ask you to do something for them. So the way that you go about doing this is that there are lots of pictures available. There's lots of micro stock. My clients all have accounts with stock agencies, micro stock agencies, so that they can go ahead and pull up a picture of this, pull up a picture of that, put a bunch of them on a sheet of paper, and then show them to me so that I understand the kind of shots that they want. Now, that's the way I prefer that happens. People don't always want to do that. They say, hey, I'm hiring you. I want you to do the work. And it is a little bit more work to go the other way. But then what you would do is ask them, well, you know, what did you have in mind? Can you give me a few more details about that shot that you want? Find out what they have to say. Then you find a collection of images that come as close as you think to what's in their head. And here's where you're going to have a little bit more variety, because you're not absolutely sure. So you want to have a broad enough variety so that hopefully something is close, but not so broad that, you know, then they start going, well, I don't know. Maybe I want that. You don't want to make the situation worse by offering them too much. But sometimes it's just easier that if you provide the shots and then find out what they want. Now, once you have an idea of the kind of shots that everyone is thinking about, then go ahead and build the visual shot list. And so for the first shot, we're going to do a vertical, and it's going to be kind of like this. The second shot will be a wide panorama because it's going to fit on a web page or something like this. And we want this sort of feel to it. And just have those visual shots down there. Now, when you're actually on the shoot and you have the shot list with the pictures and the descriptions and any pertinent information that goes with it, not only are you and the client now on the same page, but then you can show the image to the subject and say, so this is kind of what we're after. We kind of want you doing this, holding it like this. I'm going to kind of do this, and off to the races you go. I cannot tell you how this just makes things go better. And then the real payoff is that when you put that gallery of photos together to show the client, and they look at them and they go, yeah, that was a great shoot, huh? And I like this shot here and this shot here. Can you give me a little lighter background on this shot? But, you know, all the discussion and the fine tuning has to do with just making the existing stuff a little closer to what they want. There's no surprises. There's none of that. Well, did you get anything like this? Or did you take a shot like that? That's the one thing you do not want to hear. You do not want to hear, well, where's the shot of blah? Well, you do not want to hear that. So again, you know, in photography, we're dealing with images. Often we're dealing with visual people, yourself included in this. So why not have the shot list match what you're doing. Why not have the shot list be full of pictures and short descriptions so that everyone on the shoot can see what's going on? You know, anyone that's helping, anyone that's posing, anyone that's collaborating with you, you're all literally on the same page. So I highly recommend the visual shot list, whether you initiate it or the subject initiates it. Either way, it's going to give you better results when it's time to review the photos from that assignment. Let's take a stroll over to the screening room. Today's screening room selection is Introducing Photoshop, Photography with Deke McClellan. Deke McClellan is a Mr. Photoshop. And I kid you not. All you have to do is go to lynda.com, look up Deke McClellan, and see how many hours of recording he has in the online training library. And a huge proportion of that recording has to do with Photoshop. So if you want to understand Photoshop, if you want to learn Photoshop, if you want to apply Photoshop techniques to your photography, Deke is not a bad guy to learn from. He has a number of titles. We're going to feature today Introducing Photoshop Photography with Deke. But once you take a look at that, you might want to look at all the other stuff. And you can watch Deke in action by visiting the Digital Story Screening Room at lynda.com/thedigitalstory. And I got some email last week that the title went up a little late, the switchover. We still had last week's title up when the podcast went up. And I checked with Lynda on that, and you know, we got it straightened out right away. But if you go to the screening room and the title that I talk about isn't there, let me know right away. Just send me an email, derek@thedigitalstory.com. All that stuff's supposed to be automatically uploaded and changed, but you know how these things go. Things happen. So if something happens to our screening room selection, please let me know. Otherwise, go over there, enjoy the introduction by Deke McClellan. And if you haven't looked at Deke's stuff before and you're kind of a Photoshop nut or you want to become a Photoshop nut, he will really help you learn the ins and outs of this application. And he is our selection for this week's TDS screening room. All right, let's do a little virtual camera club news. I want to talk about fall color with Safari West. On October 23 through 25 this year, it is a great time. I think October is the best time to be in Sonoma County. Whether you're going to the ocean, whether you're hanging out in the vineyards, regardless of what you're doing, October is just absolutely beautiful. The weather is usually gorgeous. Never a guarantee on the weather, but it is usually very, very nice. And so on top of being here, on top of doing the environmental photography, on top of doing the portrait work, on top of hanging out with other people who are as passionate about photography as you are, then we have Safari West right there in the middle of the workshop with our own guide who is a photographer who takes us to the places where the good shots are. We're not just doing a regular tour, and you'll come away with images that people will go, where did you take that? Did you go to Africa? That kind of stuff, seriously. And it's all part of the workshop. Now, here's the fun part. I made a mistake. it's gonna benefit you. So the prices went up on Safari West. And so when I put together the workshops page, you'll see that the listed price is, I believe, $645. Well, when I sent out the reservation forms to the folks that wanted to sign up, I put last year's price on the reservations form. I forgot to update the reservations form. So everyone that signed up for the workshop so far got it for $599. So there's no way I'm going to charge, you know, the last few folks that sign up for this workshop $645. That just would not be right. So you get a discount, but I'm going to stand by it because, first of all, it's such a terrific workshop. I want you to come out if you want to come out. And second of all, what they're charging at Safari West is substantial, but, you know, we get our own truck. We get our own driver. We get our own tour. It's worth it. It's worth it for me to have you experience that. So anyway, if you want a reservation form, I'll make sure it has the $599 price on it. Just go to the workshops page at the Digital Story, which is thedigitalstory.com/workshops. Go to send me info, choose Safari West, send in the form. It'll take you literally 5 seconds. I'll get you a reservation form and you can review all the details. And if you like what you see, you can sign up right there. Alrighty. And then just a reminder for those of you that are software minded, that are moving from Aperture to Photos or Lightroom, workshop is on August 7th and 8th. And again, same thing, if you're interested in figuring out life after Aperture, or you just want to learn about Lightroom and you want to learn about Photos for OS X and you want to learn about Emulsion and all these other apps I'm going to talk about, go to the workshops page and instead of choosing Safari West, choose the Aperture workshop and I'll send you a reservation form for that. Let's talk a little bit about Sizzlepix for a second. I've been doing private photography lessons at the studio during the summer because a lot of kids want to learn photography and a lot of parents are willing to have them do that. And so they hire me to teach them. And I love doing this. I actually wrote about this on The Nimble Photographer. It's about teaching these kids photography and I really like the posts I put up on The Nimble Photographer because I really like what I'm doing with them. How does that relate to Sizzlepix? Well, I have them sitting there in the studio and we're doing our lessons and stuff and we're talking about stuff. I'll catch them every now and then looking at the images that line the whole downstairs classroom and they're all Sizzlepix and they're all images that I like and enjoy looking at every day. And I just love it when these teenagers go up to these things. They've never seen anything like this before. And they'll go, what is that? How did you do that? How did you make that? And then I tell them, well, the photograph is mine. And then the actual Sizzlepix is made by this company that does this. And they do it very well. And I'll actually like sometimes take them off the wall and let them hold it and everything. I just love seeing their expression. It's just so cool. And it just reminds me that when you have a Sizzlepix or more hanging up wherever you are, wherever your working space or living space is, it will attract conversation. People will think of you differently as a photographer than if they'd never seen your work presented this way before. It's really something to consider. Sizzlepix.com. They have the new process, the 5K ultra high definition Sizzlepix, same price, better even than before, which is kind of hard to imagine. And we have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. It's like a retina display you can hang on the wall. And then I want to talk just a moment about Red River Paper because I had the privilege for Father's Day of printing out graduation photos for various granddads and dads and all that kind of stuff. And it was kind of a last minute thing. I would say, oh, you took all those pictures at graduation. Father's Day is tomorrow. This is, you know, back a few days ago. Can you make a bunch of prints so we can frame them and give them? And I go, of course I can. And I could because I had plenty of inventory of paper. I had beautiful 5x7 sheets in a couple different surfaces. And I had ink for my printer, all of which I got from Red River Paper, all of which I had on hand. I was the hit. I was the savior. I was the guy that saved the day by being able to do it on such a short turnaround. And if I did not have that stuff on hand, I would not have been able to do that for folks. And that's what pictures can do. Picture, and I was there when a lot of them were given. And it, you know, it means a lot. When it's a subject that means a lot to the person receiving it, and it's well presented, and looks nice, that's a good thing. So my point here is that keep your paper supply and your ink supply on hand so that when those instances come up where people need something, where or you want to make something special for someone on short notice, that you have the supplies on hand so you can do that. And the place to get those supplies is at Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story, and they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Alrighty, I think that's going to do it for me today. I just want to mention to you, if you're going to order from B&H or Amazon, please go to the advertising tiles on thedigitalstory.com first. They're in the second column there. One says Amazon, one says B&H. Just click on it. Doesn't make any difference where it takes you on their site. Just enter search for what you want. And by doing so, you'll help support the site. It's really nice for me. And I am working on some terrific stuff for next week, so make sure you come back and join me. Until then, have a fabulous week. And like I said, if anyone really has the scoop on camera day, will you post that on Facebook for me? All right. Until next week, bye-bye now.